San Diego. Get that thing down there. We're good. I'm Joan. I'm an alcoholic. Everybody here okay? All right. Oh, sorry about that. I got a section of friends over here that have a little help. I promise not to talk too fast. And so, oh, I am so glad to be here. It's such a privilege to be at any Alcoholics Anonymous meeting or function. And I consider I'm excited tonight. I've seen several people here that just kind of blow me away. I just can't believe it. But first of all, thank you, Larry, for inviting me. And anyway, I get this out of the way here. I do have a home group. Carlsbad Thursday night workshop. The date of my last drink is June 15th, 1957. Now get that. I know. I was 9 years old, you know. So no, I was 25. Okay. So, anyway, that's 57 years. So if you want to add it together, I don't really care. You know, it doesn't matter anymore. It used to bother me a lot. But anyway, considering the alternative, I'm glad to be here with whatever age I am. And but this is, you know, some of you that are new, I don't know that there was two or three hands went up for newcomers, I think. If not, there probably are anyway that didn't raise their hands. And whether you're here and you're happy about it or you're not happy about it, I'm glad you're here. Because when I got here, I was not very happy about it. And but then how did I get here? Well, it's kind of... I got here kind of by mistake, in a sense, but I kind of stayed temporarily. Mine's always been temporary. I was going to just stay for a while, you know. And but my mother told me she never had any trouble with me till I was two, and then it was like it was downhill from then on. And so that's the kind of kid I was. It was just very, very unhappy. Never talked to anybody. I was afraid. School, I was afraid, and my fear come out in anger. That's the way I see it anyway. I was just angry all the time, and I had no regard for other people whatsoever, for their feelings. I didn't know there was such a thing, that other people had feelings. I thought it was just me. Everything revolved around me, and that's the way, not that that's a little self-centered, But that's the way I was. I was always that way. And so as it went on, I didn't even have a drink till I was 12 years old. So I don't know how I lasted to 12, but I did. And it was, you know, like kind of, you can't drink all the time back in, you know, where that was. That was like in the 40s, you know. And you can't drink all the time, but you drink on the weekends. You drink. It was with the older crowd. I went with the older crowd. Like when you're 12, 16 is old, you know. So I hung out with them, and I was always in a hurry. So I hung out with them, and then, not very many exciting things happened, except that I seemed to black out a lot. Like I would remember Friday night, and then next thing I know, it's Sunday. So it was just kind of like that, and I drank very fast. I was a gulper. I thought somebody was going to take it away from me, I guess, but I just gulped a lot. And but so it's just like I was in a hurry. I drank, as far as I know, so that I wouldn't have to think and I wouldn't have to feel. And this was the way it always was for me. I couldn't stand reality. I thought, well, reality is a nice place to visit, but I don't want to live there. And so reality and I never got connected for a long time. But anyway, so as time goes on and you think that I decided I didn't want to be in school anymore. And so 2 weeks into the 12th grade, I decided I had enough of that. And So they showed me my IQ to, I assumed, to show me I should stay, you know. And I thought that. I thought, well, if I'm that smart, who needs it? You know. If you've ever heard a story about alcoholics are just a little above the average intelligence, right? Peggy Rose knows about that. Just a little smarter, you know, a little smarter. And but we're so smart, we have to go to meetings every night so we don't forget not to drink. You know, I mean, this is... So when I was... So I left school at that time, and then I was engaged to this guy that was... a couple of years older, and he came back from overseas, and we got married just 10 days after I was 17 years old. Now, that's pretty smart, isn't it? And, well, I'll tell you, I wish I could have got through this marriage this fast when I was in it, but let me tell you, in 5 years, I had 4 children. So, yeah, I was very busy, and... So this is what happened. I mean, he left when I was 22 years old, and I had 3 children. I was expecting the 4th. So this is the way it was. And so, and then when my my mother and my grandfather were both very chronic alcoholics and stereotype back in those days alcoholics, and so. I would get those little children to bed, I mean, they were very, very small, and so I'd put them to bed because I knew that if I drank in the daytime, that I would get drunk. So I'd put them to bed, you know, and then drink. Well, then, of course, I'd put them to bed earlier and earlier, you know. And I would sit in the living room with a cigarette in one hand, and a drink in the other, and then I, what did I say? Huh? I don't know what I did. Oh, okay. Well, anyway, I'm drinking. Whatever I said was sure funny. I wish I knew what it was. But anyway... So I'm drinking and I'm smoking and I'm playing and I play my good alcoholic music, you know, one by Judy Garland entitled Alone, and then one by Frank Sinatra entitled No One Cares. Now that's the kind of drinking I did, and that was my fun time. So, but I would sit there and I would hate my grandfather and I would hate my mother because they didn't care about anybody. You know, if they cared about anybody, they wouldn't drink. You know, I had problems. I never saw it at all. There was no connection. I never thought about it. And so anyway, my grandfather went to a couple of meetings. They took him, but he was very, very sick. And he died of chronic alcoholism in January 1956. Well, my mother was in the same hospital in the same condition. They said she wouldn't live, but she did. And she came out, and in a month or so, she called me to see if I wanted to go to a meeting with her to see what helped her. And I thought to myself, well, I haven't been out of the house for 7 years, so why not do that? And so with this in mind, this was in April of 1956, and in Pasadena is where the meeting was, and there wasn't very many meetings in those days. And so I just turned 24 years old. So I went to the meeting with my mother. And, I mean, these people, I mean, just full. I mean, there's lots of people, this bigger, and just laughing and carrying on. But they were so old, really old, you know, 40, 50 years old, really old. And I thought, well, they should quit, you know, they're so... And... the average age was like 42 years old, and my mother was 42 years old. So anyway, the thing of it was is that the women there, as I said, there weren't very many women, but the women that were there said to me, keep coming back. And I thought, well, they like me. You know, I haven't been invited back to any place for a long time. And so I went back another week to another meeting, and they just were really nice, you know, and people were nice and friendly and all that sort of thing. It was some place to go and get away from all those kids. My God, at that time when I first went to my first meeting, the oldest one was 6 years old, 6 and 4 and 2 and 11 months old, something like that. And that was a reason I came, but it wasn't nothing to do with my drinking. It was nothing to do with my drinking. I just found people that would, you know, I could talk to. I didn't talk to them, but we just hung out. And I saw my mother, and I was really, that made me happy. Because then I found out, as time went on, what was really the problem. And I got to be friends with my mother. And so this was a great friendship we had. We used to go to meetings together a lot. But anyway, so my drinking got worse and worse for some reason. And so there come a time when they said, well, they're going to, my mother said they're going to take my children away from me and put me in a, lock me up somewhere. And I thought, well, I guess I better say I'm an alcoholic, because I was just visiting 3 or 4 months. And so I said I'm an alcoholic. And then it took a while, changed areas. So I went to Arcadia, and this woman called me, two women came, and she said, I'll be your sponsor. And that's how they did that. And so I went, started going to Arcadia, became my home group. And Norm Alpe was there. We were great pals. And so he was there about a year before I got there. And we started going to meetings, and I just couldn't get it. You know, I mean, I couldn't get it. It's just, you don't understand. My case is different. I'm too young to be an alcoholic. I'm too young. I haven't done some of the things that I heard the women that did speak, what they talked about. I mean, there was a woman that talked about being arrested 85 times on the corner of 5th and Town in Los Angeles. There was a woman that talked about coming from back east, coming out here, and she'd been married 7, 8 times, and one of them was to one of Al Capone's men. I mean, really. And some of you are too young, you don't know what I'm talking about. But anyway, trust me, that's old. I just kept, you know, they kept taking me, picking me up, no matter what. You know, no matter what, they let me come. And it's a miracle, you know. It was a miracle because I never intended to not drink. The last meeting I went to that I drank, because I'd go to meetings drinking, and they put up with it. And it was in El Monte, and I think the speaker that night was supposed to be Pappy Boyington, who was a World War II ace, for those of you who are older than me. And but during a meeting, before it got going too far, I got restless, you know, and I had been drinking. So I walked out of that meeting, and I never walked on the street in El Monte. And but I walked right out of there and walked down around the corner and went to the only bar, they tell me, that's there. Like you can smell it, you know. Anyway, I went in there, and I came out. When I came out of there, and there were 4 guys standing on the corner, these old guys. And they were standing there, as I find out, they were worried about me. So then when they saw me come out, then they went back to the meeting. And so that was the last night that I had a drink. But it wasn't intentional. I don't know it was any different than anything else. Not any different. But maybe they got me going on something, because what they did, and new people, I call it tricking you in early sobriety, but it's called service work, really, I find out later. But anyway, I'm all for service work. And they wanted me to wash cups and ashtrays. We had real cups and real ashtrays, you know, and for a month. And then, okay, I'll do that. But then when that's over, I'm going to drink. So then it was something else, and it was set up the chairs for, you know, whatever. And then, you know, it got went on and on, and it kept doing these tricky little things. And I always was going to drink later, because then they made me secretary of a women's group. And my sponsor said, you have to go to a women's group. It's in the book, she said. It's in the book. I tell people it's in the book. I've never found it in the book. But when people ask me things, I think Sylvia and I are talking about this. I think Sylvia and I, one time, a sponsor asked me something. I said, it's in the book. It's in the book. And if they want to know what page, I give them a page. You know, that go look for it. And so anyway, so that's how I kind of got started. And then, of course, it got to where they get me secretary, this, that, and the other. And finally, by 2 years, I became secretary of the Arcadia group, which was, you know, you're shaking your head. You understand. It's prestige. That's a terrible word in Alcoholics Anonymous, isn't it? But that's the way, you know. So now I figure Alcoholics Anonymous needs me. You ever hear anybody 2 years old, you know, anyway. 2 year olds don't come up and get after me. But that's the way I was. And it kind of evolved that way. But the other thing is that to start out going to meetings, I didn't, as you know, I had no education. I had no money. I needed a babysitter every time I left the house. And so one of the ladies said, well, why don't you do my ironing? And then that'll give you a little money to pay for a babysitter. So I started doing that, and then this one told this one, and this one told that one. And then pretty soon I'm doing a lot of ironing. And and that was just temporary. See, my middle name just became temporary for a lot of years. Temporary. Just temporary. And but this temporary ironing job that I did 7 days a week for probably 12, 14 hours a day lasted for 13 years. Oh, God. And I didn't drink. And my kids all became teenagers during that time, and I let them live. And it was really something else. So I was known as like the switchboard of the San Gabriel Valley. You know, I was always there. And the women I sponsored, they'd come over, sit on the couch while I'm ironing. And I had a 25-foot cord on my phone, you know, the phones that you used to put like this, you know. And I'd walk around with that. And so I did a lot of that. They always knew I was there. And then some women would call and they'd have some things to do around the house. They would do that while they were talking to me on the phone. They would not waste time. You know, they did stuff. And so that's kind of what it was for 13 years. And I had somebody come up to me one time. It was several years ago. And I was getting a cake or I was speaking. I don't remember which. And she said, you know, when you got sober, I wasn't even born yet. And she said, not only that, neither was my mother. So I have suffered with this age thing. You know, first I was too young, you know, and all this stuff. And then I get into the, where was I? I'm through with this ironing business, I think. I get out of that quick, too. That was a pretty long job. And that's as I put my kids through school and all that, through that. Somebody I sponsored, her husband was a CPA, and he called me, and he said, I'm auditing this place of business, and you ought to go up and see about it. Well, I haven't been out of the house yet, you know, and I'm still 37 years old by then, or whatever, 38. And so I go up to this place of business, and I talk to the bookkeeper, and I said to her, in effect, I said, you don't want to hire me. I don't know anything, and you don't want to hire me, do you? And so she hired me. And so there I was, learning the bookkeeping. I'd never even been in an office before. I was supposed to do the payroll and all this stuff. I'd never even seen a paycheck. And so I learned all this stuff. And then, of course, I can go to meetings all the time. Before, you can see, I couldn't go very, very often. And if I did, I had to plan 2 weeks ahead to do something special. You know, during those 13 years, I just couldn't just go that night if somebody called me. So anyway, now I'm doing all kinds of stuff and just going all over town and L.A. and every place at night and doing this and just being just, service work was just great, just a perfect thing for me. And I would do everything from serving coffee to the front door to whatever. And I had told this guy that I was at this, where I went to work, was a, it's kind of interesting. It was a wholesale retail pharmacy. I was surrounded with drugs. But then I don't know anything about that, so that didn't bother me any. But it was kind of interesting. I'd be thrown in around all these stuff. But anyway, 4 years I was there. 4 years on this job and never took a day off or anything. And so I tell this guy that was in L.A., he said he told his manager, and the manager called me, and I went down to see her, and was in one of these big Tishman buildings at Wilshire, Normandy. And so I told her about my 4 years experience, and so she hired me as assistant to the controller. So he needed help, so I did caught him all up and everything and did all that stuff. And so then they called me in. I'd been there for a while, and they called me in there, and they said, "Do you think you can do the controller job?" And I said, "Well, how long are you going to let me think about it?" And she said, "Well, we're letting him go at noon." So that's how I became an executive controller of this big company and had subsidiary companies. But think of this, out the window, I could see the Wilshire Normandy Sunday night meeting. If any of you have ever been around long enough to know where that was, it was 300 or 400 people. I went there all the time, and it's nice if you look out the window. But it's very active in Los Angeles, you know. I lived in the Silver Lake area, but I was all over, just every place. And so then, I moved into there. But I was there about a year or so, and then my mother had moved down to San Diego. My sister was in San Diego, and so I moved down to San Diego, and with no job, no nothing, my little resume. And so I got a job down here, and I'd known where all the meetings were because I'd spoken at some of them, and I had been visited, you know, around, so I knew where to go and all that sort of thing. And so it took me a couple of months before I found the job, and it was a steel distributor company, and I was there for about 9.5 years. And the thing about it, the guy was about my age, and he was a pretty good alcoholic, and he had these lunches, you know, and he'd come back in not such good shape, and he wasn't very nice sometimes. But then I just pretty soon I was like a sponge. You know, I learned this department and helped this one and helped this one, and pretty soon I'm out helping the yard. And I mean, you know, I did everything because I wanted to learn things, you know. So anyway, just to say this because of where I come from, is that I end up as the executive treasurer of this corporation. I had a company car. I had credit cards. I had money as far as that goes. But I mean, you know, it's just stuff. It's just stuff. And 9.5 years, I couldn't take it anymore. So I had, during that time, I was involved in a couple of different conventions, and I was involved in many groups, you know, at different levels. And but this is, it was very difficult to do that. It took me a while to figure out I don't like to be treated this way. And it was always, it got to where, like, he said, it was like he and I against them. They aren't important. Everybody there, they're not important. Just he and I. Well, I didn't like that, of course. But anyway, so I left there, and I called a guy that I okay the credits for their sales and things like that, you know. And there was a couple of people I just kind of looked after, and I knew they were good guys. I knew that I could okay something. Maybe somebody else I wouldn't. And I called to let him know I wasn't going to be there anymore. And he says, "Where are you going?" I said, "I don't know." And he says, "Well, why don't you come work for me?" So I went to work for him, and I was there for 7 years. Now, during that, I was still continuing. During that time, it was like that was probably by 84. And I'm trying to think when this came in. It came in 84, 94. Anyway, it came in later. I worked there, and it was just like night and day. This guy was so nurturing, and he was so kind. And he was my age, but he was the nicest guy. He started like the first annual sailing because I was there. He done the first annual picnic because I was there. The first annual whatever, just because I was the first woman he had in there, was the first in-house bookkeeper. He didn't even have an in-house. He made one. He made me one. And so that's the kind of guy he was. But what happened is he decided to retire after the 7 years, close to 7 years, and he sold it, give it to the estimator, which that doesn't have anything to do with it, but he was just the opposite of this guy. I didn't like him. And he was not, didn't trust anybody, and it was a bad situation. It took me not very long to decide I don't want to work for this guy, you know. And so I left and worked that was a steel fabricator that I worked for 7 years. So anyway, that then I wound up helping a guy run his business that was going down the tube. We worked together at the first steel place. And so I helped him for 2 years before it just went. It just couldn't hold on anymore. So that was like 93. And so what happened was right after I got that all wrapped up and all taken care of, that company, and my mother went to have a test. One of those just routine, not it's routine, but it's anyway, it didn't go well, and ended up in emergencies and all these things. And my mother died in October of 93, and so I had no idea that it would bother me, you know, and even. You know, because my feelings, I have shut down. I mean, I don't show that much, and about things. Don't talk about things much. I don't talk about the pain it was all those years and all that stuff. But so what happened is I took care of the things I was supposed to take care of, and because Alcoholics Anonymous had taught me, you know, I had become the person that I should have become, and I just did the things I had to do, and. Went to the functions that I was already involved in, and I had commitments that I had to go. But other than that, I just kind of sat there with the drapes closed. I didn't even realize that I was doing that. But then come January of 94, this is what's kind of exciting because this guy is here tonight, which is really special for me. But anyway, he called me, and he said, can you help me? And that's as far as he got. And I said, I'll do it. Whatever it is, I'll do it. And he said, can you help me with the international convention and with the public relations? And so that's Paul, who most of you know. And so anyway, that saved my neck. And so I went and did that. And that was just quite an experience. Some of you weren't here, you know, then. It's actually 19 years ago, almost 20 years ago now, and but it was, they say 65,000 people came in town, something in that neighborhood, and so anyway, and then another group would call me, and they're having trouble with their secretary had run off with the money, and would I come in and fix the books? I mean, this was a convention that the check for the hotel bounced. I mean, oh. So, you know, things like that. And I was treasurer of the world. I mean, I was everybody's treasurer. But you don't realize how that trust, what that trust means. I mean, I told them, you shouldn't trust me like this. I mean, they would sign checks and just give me the checks and let me do whatever I want. And I said, you really shouldn't do that. You know, but that's just the way I was treated. And but considering that I was not a very trustworthy person, I wouldn't know the truth if I fell over it. And, you know, lie and steal and all those good things that we do as part of our bringing up, you know. But anyway, so that's kind of where I was 20 years ago. And so my mother died just like we went to meetings a lot together. I either saw her or talked to her every day. And I did some books for a few small companies at home, and then I got to where I did about 12 companies' books at home, and did them every month, and then their taxes and things like that, you know. And then what happened was I went on this bus trip just it went up to, you know, just like an overnight type thing, and and I met the owner of his, he was driving, and he said, would you like to do this for us, you know, as a tour director of the bus? And I said, well, yeah, that sounds great. So he said, well, this was Wednesday. He says, well, I need somebody Saturday to go to Las Vegas for 3 days. And I said, okay. So that's, I kind of fell into that. Well, in the meantime, I'm still doing this 12 companies books. And so I started doing those bus trips. And I'm telling you, I was so old when it started. I was 65 years old when I got on that bus the first time. And I was so old because I've been hanging around with women and people that were in their 30s. And I said, oh, see, I was going through that thing. So I thought, oh, geez. So this, I mean, here I hop on the bus. Well, I wasn't really hopping in those days. But I got on the bus. And here's these people that are 70, 80, 90 years old. And they're going, you know. Some of them have walkers, some have wheelchairs. They're going. And that's where I got younger. And so, but it wasn't intentional that my activity kind of had to go by the wayside. I would go occasionally to Beanie's, I'd get my cake, I'd do things like that, but pretty soon I got pretty involved in this tour business, and I was, the last 8 years of it, I ended up practically running the company the latter part of the years because the woman was well, she was an alcoholic, is what it was, and it was in her home. And so she finally, she just went to bed, you know, and she just let me run it. And before that, I was doing the thing like I would schedule all the hotels, schedule all the, everything for the brochure, make that, do all that stuff, make the reservations, then go on the trip. And that took me away. As I said, it wasn't intentional. I just thought I found my spot. That's what I, how I felt. I found my spot. I felt, I mean, I was so happy, and people were so happy with me that I thought this is what the way it's going to be. This is where I was to end up doing, be a tour director, run this company, and all this stuff. Well, this woman in September of 2011 died from chronic alcoholism. It was on her death certificate because I saw it. But anyway, and she left it to her son, who didn't know anything about the business at all. And he said, oh, please, will you please stay because we need your help to do this, that, and the other. And you just know everything, and you took care of my mother, and you did all this. And, of course, I mean, I wasn't going to leave, you know, and all this stuff. And so I got everything ready the next few months and all that lined up and all that. And then a couple of days before Christmas, in effect, he said, oh, we don't need you anymore. And I had already planned for that year of 2011 to be the last of my bookkeeping. I thought, you know, I'm going to turn 80. That just seems realistic. Don't be doing books, you know, when you're 80 years old, for God's sake, and make a mistake and all that stuff. So let's quit while I've still got my faculties. So I'd already planned that. So that all happened at the same time. And it was really difficult. It was very difficult. And because I had wrapped my whole self into this business, and I didn't know. This may sound a little strange. It does sound strange to me, but this is what I felt. I didn't know how to get back to meetings. I had lost touch. I'd lost contacts. But Paul would call me every birthday. He'd call me every time, and he started because I had a friend of over 30 years that she always gave me my token. And but she died right after I got my 50, and so from then on, Paul's been giving me my token. So when he called me that June of 2012, I said, you know, I'd been going someplace else to get a cake, which I really wasn't happy about at all. It was just a matter of doing it, and that's it. But I said, I really wanted to go to Thursday night in Carlsbad. And he said, of course. So I've been there every Thursday since. And it's just like, starting all over. But now I found my niche again, you know. And I go back and I started at the door You know, I knew a lot of people there. And here again, in my case, what was a problem, I make it a problem, that now I'm sober so long that I stand out. You know, I don't fit. I'm always looking, all my life I've been trying to fit. You know, every time I get to here, I don't fit anymore. I have done a job on this, let me tell you. But anyway, so I didn't fit. So Thursday night, I fit. Because there's lots of them over 40, and their age is older than I am. See, that's another thing. Tons of people in their 30s, plus the newcomers and all that stuff. It has everything that I need, you know. So I'm looking for something that I need, you know. And it's been a remarkable journey, really, because now I get the greatest bit of service I think that you can have is like sponsoring, because I have to get after someone here sitting in the front row that you stay current with your sponsor and you call regularly and all that stuff. And it's just it's a great honor, if you will, to have people trust you with themselves and back and forth. And I have different people that, you know, you kind of share whatever seems to be, fits with this person. It's necessary. Anything that seems to fit. And somebody else, something else will be, you know, maybe not the whole thing for one person. But, I'm not afraid, because I had secrets for many years, secrets. And, they'll kill you, you know, because when I came in, it was, what I listened for was the differences. I listened for the differences. And eventually I got the hang of that, listened for the similarities. And in my case, I couldn't find very much. But it was the feelings, not the other stuff that I told you about. That was not what you identify with. They would say how they'd feel. And I said, gee, I felt like that. But then they'd go on. And then I would cut that thing about, I don't relate to that. It had to relate to everything, not just part of it. So it took me a while. It was a struggle. It was a struggle because I was a child when I came in here, and I had four children who the oldest one next week will be 65 years old. That is not funny. That is not. And one of my daughters is 23 years on the program. She came down Thursday, Friday, and home today. And we went to two meetings. She went Thursday night with me, went to women's group on Friday. And then she has two children that are alcoholics. And my oldest daughter has a son that's an alcoholic who's 45 years old, my oldest grandson. And but now what we have out there is we have my granddaughter who is 38 years old. Been trying to do this since she's about 15. Now my grandson finally got it. He has 3 years. It's wonderful because he got right into it and he does the service work and he does all these things and he's doing a great job. And they both have been in jail and all that stuff. But this girl is hanging out with gangsters, it's just scary. And it's hard. Family, it's hard. So you can't really help sometimes family. You have to try to let somebody else. But it's all about her still, 38 years old, and it's still about her. It's not her three teenage sons, who my daughter is practically raising. I mean, I wish that she could be one of us. She has been here. She's been to Thursday night with her brother. They've been there. They live all the way in Visalia, near Fresno. So I don't see them very often. And another daughter lives in Las Vegas. But I'll tell you, because people ask me later too, about my children. My son is a missionary in the Philippines, and he's been there for like almost 30 years, comes and goes, you know. My youngest daughter, I lost her when she was 14 years old to the courts. which I don't know if they do that today or whatever, but they took her and put her in a foster home. But for whatever reason, she's doesn't want anything to do with the family, and she's soon to be 60. So you either get over it or whatever. But so I have these three. But my son, I always think my son is kind of an example where I use sometimes if I think about it, that we come in here, our problems are so heavy. I mean, mine were pathetic. I was so pathetic. I whined and yelled and screamed and whatever. We all have our own thing, you know, that it said, God only gives you what you can handle. And I said, God, I think you got me mixed up with somebody else, you know. And but I thought my problems were the worst of everything because I had all these little kids. And nobody had small children. No one had small children at all in where I was in the area. And my son couldn't speak and he couldn't walk. He had some surgeries and he's learned he speaks for himself. He can sing, but he doesn't speak well. But anyway, I thought that was so real heavy, you know, for me. And then what happens in a year or so, a woman came in named Jackie. She had six children, and her oldest was 100% disabled with cerebral palsy. Her husband was in prison. Oh, okay. Then later on, Mary comes in. She had five children, and her youngest had Down syndrome so bad that it had to be institutionalized. So it's hard to sometimes, in my case, to look at say, well, gee, I don't have it so bad as somebody else. But you do get that way eventually. But it isn't easy. It isn't easy to change that mode of that my problems. You know, see, my whole thing was you don't understand my case is different. Well, it was a little different. I came in a little differently, and I did have some little different circumstances. But I was just like the rest of everybody, just scared and angry and didn't fit and didn't belong, and nobody loved me and nobody cared. And this is what I kept to myself. This is what I kept to myself because I couldn't talk about myself. I never heard anybody talk about themselves ever before Alcoholics Anonymous. Never heard it. Never heard anybody talk about themselves. And my sponsor, I'd say, I have to come up and talk. I'd go up there she'd call her sponsor later and said, well, did she talk? She said, no. I was up there for 2 hours maybe, never said a word. It just was really, really hard to trust somebody. And when I finally did something, I'd say, tell them this thing that I didn't want to talk about. And they'd say, well, what was that all? They thought I had done something really bad, you know. And so, I mean, they treat it like, oh, is that all? You know, we've done whatever you've done, we've done. And I just really, as far as being able to share at a meeting, I think this is, for me now, just to be of service in this regard, to at least share the fact that that I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm an example, good or bad, that this program does work on a long-term basis. Make it temporary, you know. Well, you know that picture. I'll cry tomorrow. My mother took my grandmother and me to see that movie. Well, when she first came in, and we went to see that movie because she identified with that movie. If some of you have seen that movie. And that's what my mother was like. And this is, you can do that and you'll drink tomorrow. I mean, that's okay, you know. But I can't thank you enough for being here, for allowing me to share as best I can my feelings with you and my experience, strength, and hope. And it's just, we're all miracles. We're all miracles that we're here. And I just thank you for this opportunity.